Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
Gotta switch it up a little bit. Say my name a little bit differently.
Say my name.
For a while there, I feel like I struggled with saying, I'm Matt, but I say it a little more articulately at this point, a little
improved.
More clearly.
Yeah, your podcasting skills have come a long way.
Dramatically improved over the past 5 years. We are taking listener questions during this Monday episode of the How to Money podcast. We've got a question that has to do with a not-so-great Fidelity account. That's right. We're criticizing the almighty Fidelity. We'll get to that one. There's another question about geographic arbitrage, and someone else is asking about financially preparing for a kiddo, what that entails. We'll get to that. Plus more during this episode, buddy.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
And by the way, there's going to be kind of a laundry list answer on the preparing for a child standpoint. There's a lot to really consider, so we'll get into all that in just a second. But Matt,
speak for yourself. I'm going to give a long-winded... We go in-depth here on the podcast.
For sure, that's what I'm saying.
We're not going to say to like, just do all these 5 to 10 things.
There are a lot of things to consider is what I'm saying. Like when it's not just one thing, right? It's not just,
I guess,
like,
I think of a laundry list and it just sounds like do this, then do
That's not.
Okay.
I just meant there's a lot to talk about.
Maybe I just don't know what a laundry list means.
Maybe you've never done laundry. No, you do. All right, let's before we get to our listener questions, Matt, I feel like it was pertinent and worth mentioning. We've talked about Mint going away. Mint is transitioning users to, and which has like been one of the most popular and free budgeting softwares in existence. Well, the folks over at Intuit said, we're shutting it down. And so if you want to, you know, continue with some of what Mint offers, well, you're going to have to come over to Credit Karma and use that. And so people are trying to figure that out. But then there are other alternatives that we've mentioned that are potentially going to be better suited for you than Mint, even if it means paying a little bit of money. Well, listener Alex reached out and he mentioned something that we've actually never heard of. It's funny. You mentioned we're going to talk smack about Fidelity in a second, but
we got some good news.
Yeah, we'll say something good on the Fidelity front. He mentioned there's something called Fidelity Full View, and I didn't even know this existed. Did you?
I did not.
No, so this is
for some reason that somebody reached out to us.
Yeah, there's like nothing out there on Fidelity Full View. Like almost nobody uses it. There's like a Reddit thread or something like that. And so,
and maybe it's because it sucks. Yeah. No, it actually, I mean, we both looked into it. It doesn't suck.
No, it's got a lot of functionality.
It's built into, like, basically if you have an account with Fidelity, you go into there. And so I guess the first main tab over on the left, it's like account/trade. if you click that, there's a big drop down, and one of the options is this thing called Full View, and it's got a little TM next to it. But obviously, with it being Fidelity, there's more of a focus specifically on net worth. Like, that's the first tab once you click it.
It's almost kind of like Empower does, right?
Yeah, exactly. Which makes sense because it's immediately automatically linked to your different retirement accounts. So they have the most up-to-date information, but what they don't have the most necessarily up-to-date information are the different accounts that you spend on. So like your credit card or your,
but you can
your
link
savings
those.
Account. You link them, but you know, like, there's always that lag, that delay as to when it updates. So you can maybe expect a little bit of that lag, but guess what? Your net worth is going to be the absolute most up-to-date number.
That's right.
You'll ever see.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool. And if you're like, oh man, I'm glad Matt and Joel mentioned some of those paid services that are in the $70 to $100 range per year. And some of them sound cool, and heck, maybe some of them might actually help me improve my finances, but I'm too much of a cheapskate to even give them a try. Well, this might be, the Fidelity Full View might be worth considering, especially if you already have an account with Fidelity.
Exactly.
So, yeah, go in there to the back end, look it up, and see if it makes sense for you. I think it seems like a decent number of people have found it helpful enough to stick with it. It's got enough functionality. Not as much as some of those paid services, and not as slick of an interface, that's for sure.
No.
like Copilot, we talked about Copilot. I mean, that is the slickest interface ever.
Super
it's
slick.
Gorgeous.
I did not look and see if they have an app. Is there a Full View app?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure.
So either way,
I was just using it on desktop.
Yeah, I looked it up here at the office as well. But again, especially if you have a Fidelity account, it already has some information there. And so you might, I don't know, be a third of the way there to entering all of your different accounts.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you have not yet set up a net worth tracker, or if you have not yet set up an account with some of the new providers that we may have mentioned, head over to the show notes. We'll have the link to where it is that you can just click that, and they'll ask you to log in, and you might find it helpful. It's free. It's already there.
It's important to mention,
check it out.
Big thanks to Alex for giving us the heads up on this.
Yeah.
And if you know of something that we don't know about, which there's a lot that Matt and I don't know about, an email.
Joel knows a lot, but he doesn't know everything.
That's what I tell my kids all the time. My son's always like, wait, do you know that guy's name? And I'm like, no, I don't know him. There is a bunch that we don't know. And so if you have insight, if you've got something that, like, you're like, wait a second, how come I've never heard them talk about that? Send us an email, man. We'd love to hear it and be able to share it with your fellow listener. So thank you to Alex for doing that. Matt, let's mention the beer we're having on this episode. This one's called La Vista Mexican Lager by Frog Rock Brewery. Is it Austell? Austell La Vista Mexican Lager.
Is it Austell La Vista?
Oh.
Like the Terminator?
Wow, I should have known. How did I mess that one up?
Well, because it's not like it's a Terminator-themed brewery or anything. it's just random. I just realized. Well, so it's brewed in Austell, Georgia, which is a suburb of Atlanta. I used to live, well, technically in Powder Springs for a
close
few months
there.
But Austell is very close to Powder Springs.
Well, I should have gotten that. Austell La Vista. That's very good.
Austell La Vista.
Next pun. But big thanks to listener Joe for giving us this beer in crowler form. So we're looking forward to having this one, giving our thoughts at the end of the episode. But Matt, let's move on. Let's get to the listener questions. If you have a money question, Matt and I, we'd love to tackle it. The website for the instructions, simple instructions for how to submit your voice memo, is howtomoney.com/ask. Takes all of a minute to record yourself. Send it over to us. Hopefully we can take yours on the next Ask HTM episode. But Matt, this first question is from a listener who's like saying, I'm thinking about having kids, but how do I get ready for that?
Hey, Joel and Matt. I'm Christy calling from California. Been listening to your show about a year now. Actually came up on my top podcasts on my Spotify Wrapped. Anyways, having been a listener for a while now, I think my husband and I have done all the recommended things like creating emergency funds, savings, maxing that 401k, investing in HSA, etc. We only have about like 10K-ish of car and student loan debt left, but we feel pretty confident we can wrap that up in a few months. We were married for a year now, and considering all the things it takes to have that first kid, would really appreciate any advice you guys have about preparing for a baby financially, and just general advice as like dads yourselves. But yeah, love the podcast.
Christy, thank you so much for that question. And yes, it was a whole lot of fun to see some of those Spotify Wrapped visuals going around. What's funny is all the meme versions
of
when folks are like,
especially after Spotify did that massive layoff, and there's like,
oh my gosh,
memes going around about that.
It's so funny. But we are massively thankful for everyone out there who has committed their podcast listening or has at least included the How to Money show.
Yeah.
But Christy, I love that you are thinking about the financial impact of procreating before you jump into the deep end. It is well worth preparing for, both mentally and financially.
Still your resolve right now.
Yes, but I mean, that being said, like, it is going to be impossible to truly fully prepare from either vantage point as well. But it is important to think through, honestly, just how your life might change. Well, it's not how it might change, how it will change. And I think it's important to think through some of the other goals that y'all might have for your lives. Like, doesn't sound like you've been married for all that long, but truly, once kids are on the scene, it gets a little more difficult to achieve some of those different goals. And so think through some of these things that you might want to accomplish before you have kids. And I'm not trying to discourage you necessarily from having kids, but just know that it is going to look different.
The guy with four kids discouraging people from having kids.
I love kids. Kids are the best, but it does get more difficult. And so the reason I mention this is I think there could be a temptation to continually kick that can down the road. Like, I want folks to enter into parenthood with their eyes wide open, but sometimes that can almost be overwhelming. And you think, I don't know, man. Like, are we mature enough? Can we handle kids? Like, who's going to let us go home with a child from the hospital? That's certainly how I felt.
Well,
So the reason I say this is, like, it makes me think about identifying a period of time when you're like, okay, I can picture myself being a parent at this point in time. Because literally, this is a conversation Kate and I had. I think it was like during premarital counseling. But I was like, oh, I could picture myself being a dad maybe when I'm 30 years old. Before that, I kind of want it to be more fun time with just the two of us. But I literally stuck it on the calendar, like in my Apple.
Of course you did.
I shot ahead. It was like 5 or 6 years.
Did you go 9 months in reverse from that date?
No, it's still on the calendar. It's funny. But January 1st, it's of 2013 is with a question mark. It's like, maybe have baby this year with a question mark. But just treat it like any other goal that you might have. Take it seriously. Prepare for it. But also you want to make sure you kind of weigh and balance that goal with other goals that you might have in life.
All right, I disagree. That takes the fun out of it. Come on, you can't plan too much. It makes me think of
different strokes for different folks.
Yeah. It makes
you might be more of like just shooting from the hip.
I am.
Literally. Just winging it.
Right.
But I do think for some folks, kind of thinking that proactively and being that intentional.
Robotically, some might say.
It can go a really long way.
Yeah. And makes me think of like someone who's going to invest in real estate. You have to take this balanced approach, because some people say, I have to continue to gather information. I have to know everything there is to know about real estate investing before I can even consider making an offer, right? And then there are other people who say, I hear real estate investing is a great way to build wealth, and they start making offers the next day. And there's a happy medium in there, right?
Sure.
Of like, yeah, it's important to like do your due diligence, learn some stuff, attend maybe some real estate investor meetings, read a couple books, start listening to a podcast, whatever it may be, before you like willy-nilly start making offers, save up enough of a down payment, have enough understanding about where you're planning to invest. But then it's also possible to overdo that and to say,
thing called analysis paralysis.
Yeah, I'm not fully prepared yet. And I think some people do that too. And the truth is, like, when you're talking about having kids, Matt, you and I, we went to the birthing class, right? Where
you
get prepared for that.
I forgot.
Emily read what to expect when you're expecting. and that's like a rite of passage, I think people go through, and understandably so.
Emily Oster?
Oh, yeah. She's
the crib sheet. So she's an economist. So basically, Christy, if you're listening and you're like really into the numbers, if you haven't checked out her book or other folks out there who are expecting, crib sheet, and she's got a book too about treating your family basically like a company.
Yeah.
And as far as efficiency, and if you're more into the numbers and into the data, she is an economist, and she attacks motherhood from the point of view of the numbers and the figures and what the data shows, as opposed to kind of like full on winging it.
Yeah, no, but she's super interesting.
Anyway.
But yeah, I guess I just want to throw that out there. It's you can overthink preparation too, right?
Totally.
But when it comes to like what you should be preparing for, let's talk about finances first. You're doing the important stuff already. Like, you're maxing out the 401k. That's huge, right? You're socking money into an HSA, also massive. And you've also got that e-fund saved up, that all-important emergency fund, which is clutch. And so the only potential account you might be missing is a Roth IRA, if you're able to contribute to that. And it might even be worth not maxing the 401k so that you can fully fund a Roth IRA if you're able to do that. But that also might be part of the et cetera that you mentioned like in your question.
That's true.
Plus, you're going to be paying off that debt that you said that you have lingering around within just a few months. So debt-free with so much going towards investments is a great place to be. And after that debt gets paid off, you're going to have even more free cash flow well in advance of the baby coming. So all in all, at least from kind of an overall holistic financial picture, Christy, it sounds like you're doing great. It sounds like you're well on your path to financial independence. You're making the right moves. And so I wouldn't be like, oh, no, wait, you're not in the financial position to have a child. I definitely don't think that's the case.
Yeah, she's got a great foundation. But let's talk now then beyond that, essentially the money gears that she's already worked through. Let's talk about some proactive steps she can take towards preparing for having a kid. And basically what we're talking about here are labor and delivery costs. And so, Jill, you mentioned them freeing up some of that cash flow after paying off that car loan, after paying off some of that student loan debt.
By the way, you can go frugal or cheap, not frugal on this. I suggested, since my mother-in-law is actually a neonatal nurse, she's like, knows what she's doing. I was like, what if we had the baby at home with your mom here? And my wife looked at me like, you're insane. I can't believe you'd even suggest that.
Let's take the homegrown approach.
That almost got my head lopped off.
No, but take that money that you've got going towards some of that debt and use that to sock up a hospital and birth fund, like a baby sinking fund, essentially, which sounds not great. So let's call it a baby savings bucket. But how much that you'll need to set aside for that is going to certainly depend on your insurance. It could cost a few hundred bucks. It could cost a few $1,000s or potentially even more. But it is a good idea just to take a look at your insurance in order to figure out what's going to be covered, what's not going to be covered. But since you're planning ahead, if the birth won't happen until, let's say, 2025, you'll have the chance even to switch up your plan during open enrollment the fall before, avoiding the high deductible healthcare plans for the year that you know you're going to incur a whole lot of expenses. Uh-huh. That might make a ton of sense. And so the best way to figure that out is just simply to crunch the numbers. That's right. Figure out how much are we going to be now paying in premiums every single month. But what does that mean that we'll be able to save on in the event of when we actually do have that baby?
That's right. Yeah. Most of the time, for relatively healthy folks, the high deductible healthcare plan makes a lot of sense if you have enough savings on hand. But if you're like, wait a second, this year is going to be the year we turn on the spigot, we're going to spend a lot on healthcare, and when you have a baby, that's the year that happens.
You spend a bunch of money.
Exactly. You want to be prepared for that and compare those different insurance offerings and pick the right one given kind of your specific circumstances. And on the note of open enrollment, you might have access to a dependent care FSA. So I would say start thinking about childcare and what your likely plans are. This is one of those areas that's become fraught with peril for
parents. Yeah, assuming one of y'all doesn't already stay at home, I guess.
Yeah. And so, like, you might have grandparents, let's say, who are eager to volunteer, or you might not. And that can make a difference in how much you need to sock aside for that. But starting to save and then using the right account, like the FSA, to avoid taxes could be wise. And again, like, maybe that first year you've got enough time off from your employer where you don't need childcare, but that's something to start thinking ahead about. And it's a good idea, Matt, kind of like you were alluding to have that conversation with your partner about future work plans and staying at home with the kids. Because either one of you might decide at some point that from a financial and from a lifestyle perspective, that it's something you like to pursue, Matt. And I feel like the tipping point is often the third child. That is when it's like, wait a second, one of our careers needs to go, potentially, if you've got three kids, like, under the age of five, not in school yet. I mean, maybe not, but either way, it's a topic that should be on the table. And if either one of you are interested or considering going that route, it's better to at least explore living on one income sooner rather than later.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of get used to the idea and used to the mechanics of a smaller income, funneling the extra income into savings so you're even more prepared.
Totally. Yeah, fewer disposable dollars. That's a reality of oftentimes having a kid, right? Because of the inability for one partner to work. And that being said, we are so glad that you've been making so much progress on your finances up until this point. But again, as your family grows, your savings rate, it might go down a bit. And that's totally okay. Like, kids, A, they're worth it. But it's also why we're fans of front-loading the sacrifice, right? Just having a higher savings rate before you have kids, before they come along. And that doesn't mean that we're intentionally, like, encouraging you to slack off when it comes to savings and investing once you do have kids. I'm just saying to give yourself a little bit of grace if you do need to pull back a little bit in order to feel more comfortable with a new budget that now includes not only another family member, but possibly even less income that's being generated by one of y'all who decides to stay home.
And that's why it's great that you've been able to do as much as you have up until this point. But if you're saying, like, listen, no, we are dialing it back to one income, we have other goals, maybe we're glad we did. We're able to do as much as we did during those early working years, but we're okay with kind of dialing back and not being as laser focused on those investment accounts so that we can, enjoy a little more flexibility as a family.
And that's sort of what I was getting at towards the beginning, I guess, like thinking through some of the different goals that you might have and to realize that things change. Even though you might think, no, we're going to keep things exactly the same. They don't stay exactly the same.
Yeah.
Even if on paper a lot of things are able to be maintained, whether it's from an employment standpoint, there's still going to be other costs, like you'd mentioned, even childcare. But in addition to that, food, just some of the other expenses that come along with adding more members to your family.
Okay. Well, on that note, that makes me think of like one last thing that we probably need to mention to Chrissy. And there's probably a lot of things we didn't mention too that are worth considering. But at least one thing is buying things secondhand. I would put up the bat signal to friends and family.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say, hey, listen.
Once you are pregnant.
Yeah.
And you've been pregnant for what? First trimester is typically.
That's when you start making
announcements. I'm getting rusty, man. It's been over 4 years now since we've had a baby. I don't even know.
Yeah,
12 weeks.
Yeah, typically. And but like then start putting the, because like think
let
about
folks know.
All the free hand-me-downs and stuff like that.
Oh,
you
my
can
gosh.
Get. People love to give you baby clothes. And think about maybe what you need to buy new and what you can get away with buying used, right? The $800 crib could be adorable. A $450 bassinet or stroller or something that might seem like a necessity. But truly, the more we can rely on hand-me-downs, borrowing, or Facebook Marketplace finds, the better off you're going to be. And you obviously, you want a couple of cute new outfits or something like that for the baby.
Obviously. I'm not going to assume.
Okay. Hey, I'm just saying.
You might want to go full on frugal and just go all secondhand. There's a lot of cute used stuff out there
that's true.
Folks are willing to
that's true.
Have their friend's kid also take pictures.
You're
of
right. Well, and the thing is, like when they're growing so fast, it's like it can be crazy expensive because, I mean, sometimes they're born and they're already wearing 6-month-old clothes depending on how big they are, right? So like some of the stuff you might have gotten as a baby shower present might already be just like too small, not fit the new baby or something like that. So
I guess you can be strategic about the used things that you get. Because like there are certain things like car seats. That's one where there's a racket and somehow the manufacturers of car seats they somehow have made it to where they have expiration dates. And I'm not saying to ignore that. Like we bought new car seats for our kids. But everything else, like literally pretty much everything else you can buy used. That makes me think of before we had our first daughter, we bought a mini crib, I think for $40. And A, it was more affordable because it's been so long since we've talked about this. But the mini crib, it's a smaller crib. And in Europe, they just call
makes
them...
Makes sense if it's called a mini crib.
They just call them cribs. But here in the U.S.
Kind of like cars.
They're supersized. Yeah. Exactly. But we paid something like $40 for that thing. And we used it for, I want to say, over 7 years. And to amortize that out, that's like... barely over $5 a year for some place for the kid to sleep.
It's like 4 cents a sleep.
Oh my god. If you're into the numbers, really crunch it. But you can be choosy when it comes to what it is that you buy new, the things that you buy used, and the things that were just where there's a massive amount of savings. Because you mentioned like a multi-$100 fancy crib. It just depends on what your priorities are and whatever it is that you want your kid to be in, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the guy who gave us this beer, by the way, Joe, we mentioned at the beginning, he and his wife, they're about to have a baby. And I picked up this beer, giving him a stroller, a used stroller that we had because he needed a jogging stroller. And I was like, people are pumped to come out of the woodwork and give you stuff, even if they're just a random podcast host where you end up listening to their stuff.
But it keeps you from having to... list something on
that's
Facebook
right.
Marketplace
yeah.
and coordinate with a buyer like, that
okay.
fails to show up.
I could have made $50, but I'd rather give it to a guy that needs it. But Matt, we've got more to get to on this one, including, speaking of kiddos, we'll talk about 529 accounts. How do you actually invest the money inside of a 529 account? There's some nuance to the answer of that one. We'll get to that and more right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
All right, man, we are back from the break-in. Let us now hear from a listener out in California. He's actually thinking about selling his house.
Hi, guys. Great show. This is Larry from Huntington Beach. I would like your opinion if we should sell my house in Huntington Beach and move to Prescott, Arizona, and buy a house. The numbers make sense to me. I think we will have more money in Arizona. My house will be paid off in 5 years and plan to retire in about 9 years. We should net about $1 million on the Huntington Beach home sale and buy a house in Prescott for about $500,000. I understand we may be able to exclude up to $500,000 on the taxable gain if we file jointly. So the second part of my call is, are we able to file jointly? My wife is an independent contractor with her own corporation. Currently, my wife and I have $245,000 in IRA Roth IRAs, $110,000 in savings, $18,000 in investments. The only debt we have is the house. So any input would be greatly appreciated. Thank you. Cheers.
Matt, I like this question because there's just a whole lot going on. And it's like, should I move? Shouldn't I move? And the truth is, when you're talking about moving, there's certainly a financial component to it, but moving also goes far beyond the numbers.
Yeah.
So if I said, hey, Matt, should I pick up and move to Thailand? You would say, I don't know,
maybe.
Joe. I hear it's a lot cheaper, but there are probably other things that you should consider before you pick up and go. And I have been to Thailand, thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't know if I plan on living there for an extended period of time, but I'll go back and visit because it is inexpensive. We've talked about arbitrage back in the day, Matt, in episode 392. And that's a great way to save money. And there's actually a really cool website that we mentioned back in that episode. It's called The Earth Awaits. We'll link to it in the show notes. But it's this site that helps you dig in and see what the average cost of living is around much of the world. And so I guess for Larry, I would say, are you moving for monetary reasons or for lifestyle reasons? And this is like truly the most important question because it's not that those secondary benefits like the cost of living or tax reduction, that they're not important, that they shouldn't factor in to kind of the decision that you make about where to live. It's just that where you choose to live is so much more than just those things, right? It's community, history, architecture.
Oh, yeah.
The beach even, right, Larry?
Huntington Beach.
Are you okay with moving away from the beach? And then, you know, make sure you wrestle with all of those realities before you just up and move to Arizona because you're saying, listen, we can sell this house for $1 million. We can buy something there for $600,000. We'll be rich Arizona style. This is going to be great. There's just a lot of things to weigh, a lot of factors to consider before you just up and do it.
Sure. Yeah. And certainly moving to Arizona, that's going to be a far cry from moving across the world to Thailand. Arizona is
culture shock, but not nearly as much.
Yeah. You will have a lot of sun. You will have a lower cost of living there in Arizona. And so this does already have some positive arbitrage realities while not looking like a massive upheaval to your life. And by the way, this is a classic retiree play where you've got retirees looking to move to the Sun Belt, Arizona, Florida, where you've got lower costs of living.
Less snow to shovel for a lot of those.
Less in taxes.
Northern folks too, yeah.
As well. But to move from an expensive locale to a cheaper, to a sunnier one. And it can just help to cover over a lack of savings, a lack of investments as well, especially if your home has appreciated as much as it sounds like Larry's has. This only goes to show and to prove that oftentimes your home, it's the number one asset that many Americans have.
Yeah, we don't want that to be the case.
But it's just the reality.
But yeah.
It's the reality of it. And this is one way to be able to retire earlier than you otherwise would likely be able to. Smart use of arbitrage can create some of those positive benefits, and using the proceeds from the sale of that Huntington Beach home to be able to buy a home in Prescott for much less and to pay for it in cash. That's another advantage that you have. You don't have to worry about interest rates. But basically, what we're talking about here is cost of living. And this is something, Joel, that, I mean, I don't know how seriously Kate and I got when it came to considering moving out west when we were talking about moving out to Denver or to Boise. But the first step I took helped me to realize that, like, okay, among many reasons, this isn't going to work out. Because in my mind, we were just paying a whole lot to live here in Georgia, here in Atlanta, because we were living close to the city. And I'm like, oh, we're not taking advantage of the things that the city has to offer. Well, that is until I looked, once I compared Atlanta to Denver or to Longmont or even Boise. And it's just like, oh, wow, Atlanta is surprisingly affordable. And so that pretty, again, for multiple reasons, that ended up being a non-starter. We didn't get very far with that. But make sure that you are, when you even are looking to move to other cities in the U.S., look at the cost of living, and it'll help you to see how far your dollars might go.
Yeah, and again, it's not everything. There are parts of the country, like, you couldn't pay me to live there. Like, sorry.
Oh, sure.
And so it's...
Even if they're offering old mansions for $1.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's not... Even necessarily because I would hate that place and I couldn't get used to it. It's just because I live close to a lot of friends and family right now. And so, like, yeah, you'd have to do a lot of convincing probably to get me to do that.
There'd also have to be the world's best brewery there.
Right.
If that were to be the case, you probably would move.
Yeah, I really might then. Well, let's talk about, like, the married filing jointly thing that Larry asked about as well. He asked whether or not they could file jointly. And I would say, yeah, you totally can. Like, is it going to be advantageous for you from a tax standpoint? That's a question we would recommend that you ask a tax pro, because there's just so many different things lurking that impact how you file your taxes as a married couple. And Matt and I, you know, we hire tax professionals ourselves. They're well worth the money. Well worth it. And, you know, if you make the wrong move here, we could be talking about paying thousands of dollars in unnecessary taxes.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
Yes.
It's millions.
Probably not.
Maybe not millions.
Probably not that much. But we, you know, Matt, we talked recently about the tax benefits of selling a home that's gone up in value significantly. Many individuals and most couples will be able to avoid taxation altogether on the gain of that property if they lived there at least two of the last 5 years. And so even if you don't normally file jointly, Larry, you might want to do so the year that you sell your home, because if you don't, that exclusion, the tax exclusion, is going to be cut in half from $500,000 to $250,000 of gain, which is a big deal. So again, I would consult a tax professional, but that is the way in a year in which you're selling a primary residence. Filing jointly is how you're going to be able to shield typically the most money from taxation.
Yeah. Yeah. How much you'll owe in tax depends on what it is that you paid for that property, how much it is that it has appreciated, how much money you sunk into the property over the years, and then, of course, that all important filing status. But if this move is good for you from a lifestyle perspective, Larry, as well as that financial one, I would say go ahead and put that house on the market. Start looking for homes in Arizona. Hopefully this is something you've already done, but I'm assuming you mentioned Prescott, Arizona, because you've been there, you like it. But if not, definitely go out there and just hang out. Visit, I mean, just like Airbnb.
For a month, yeah.
Or even like a weekend, because I feel like if you go out there for a month, maybe, I guess, if you're working from home, right? Like if you are still working during the day and then truly you're living there like a local. But I would say, like, if you moved out there for just like a 1 week vacation, you might think, well, shoot, what am I supposed to do here for a week?
Yeah.
But you also might be saying that same thing were you to take a week off from work and then just hang out there at your home in Huntington Beach. If you haven't developed some of those interests, some of those hobbies, some of the things that you want to pursue once you do enter into retirement. But yeah, go to Prescott, live like a local. You can start even honing in, not just on the city where you're kind of like, okay, according to the Census Bureau data, I should be able to find a median home for around $500,000. It depends so much on the specific neighborhoods and being able to pinpoint where it is that you want to live. I think that is a really important step as well. Something that you can do over the coming years as well.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a good point, Matt, too. It's not in the worst... It's often in the best interest of a lot of people who are moving to rent somewhere for 6 months while you're kind of considering where you want to live, because if you end up buying the house and you say, oh, wait a second, I actually really like Southwestern Prescott. Like, that's my favorite part of the town. And you're like, but I'm in Northeast Prescott, and it's too far to drive to the things that I really care about. The less you know about a town, the more it behooves you to rent for a little bit. It's not throwing money away. It's helping ensure that you don't throw more money away by making the wrong real estate purchase.
That's right, man. Renting, whether long-term or short-term, can help you to get to know a city before you move there. But Joel is here from a listener now who has opened a Fidelity account, and it may not be the best account for him.
Hey, Matt and Joel. This is Dave from Marietta, Georgia. I've been listening to your podcast for several years now, but I admittedly am not able to get to every podcast each week, so I apologize if you've already answered this. My daughter was born a couple of months ago, and I just opened a 529 account for her with Fidelity. I don't know if she will end up going to college, but I want to have at least something saved for her if she does decide to go. And if not, I'm really happy that I can now roll it into an IRA. I wanted to see if you have any advice on what I should have the funds invested in within the 529 account. Knowing that she could use these funds in about 18 to 25 years or potentially keep them for the rest of her life makes me wonder if I should add in investments for less volatility if she decides to use them in the shorter term. Is this something where I can invest it all in FC Rocks and reevaluate in 16 years or so if I need to switch to some more stable things like bonds? Just wanted to get your take on it. Thanks.
Dave, first off, congrats on the baby girl.
Fresh newborn.
You're in the midst of...
He's in the throes of it.
Sleepless nights.
So I will say, he was saying that he didn't he hasn't been able to listen to all the episodes. What else are you doing, man? You've got That's a newborn right. now. You should be at home listening to every single podcast. You're not going out
That's
anymore.
Right. We should be top of your Spotify rap next year.
Okay, so I take that back. So this was unsolicited advice for Dave, but this kind of goes back to Christy's question. But hey, you should be going out. Joel, I think back to...
The first 6 months are actually the only window where you can.
Well, and then on top of that... I know you agree with this because this is something that we did together, but it was our oldest girls were maybe just a couple months old before we started going out on date nights. And so once they're into a predictable rhythm, you put them down and then you would come over, you would hold down the fort and Kate and I would go out. And it is so important to make sure that you are carving out some time for you and your partner that's not just completely preoccupied with changes or a feeding schedule and,
yeah,
and things like that.
You gotta have some normalcy.
Again, we're talking about Christie's foundation, her financial foundation, but this is like a familial foundation, like making sure that your relationship with your partner is super solid.
Yeah.
But you would do that, and then the next week, it's your date night, and I would go over there, you put Soma down.
Still do that, like all these years later.
It's crazy. So for literally for 10 years, this is something that we have been able to maintain, and dude, I 100% credit that intentional time with how strong I think Kate and my relationship is, and yeah. I mean, I'm sure you and Emily feel the same.
It's a big part of it, for sure.
Yeah.
That rhythm matters a lot.
Yeah. Less 529 advice, more unsolicited baby/couples advice.
Well, maybe we'll just change the focus of this podcast. We'll see. But let's get on to kind of Dave's question, the heart of what he's asking about. And there's something that we actually have to tackle, Dave, before we offer our thoughts on picking funds inside of that 529 account. We have some advice on that front, too. But you mentioned that you opened up that 529 plan via Fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And we are big fans of Fidelity, especially when we're talking about 401ks, IRAs, HSAs, anything with an A in it, I guess, right?
A K. Guess what doesn't have
that's right.
A K.
529 does not have an A or a K in it, Dave. And so you got to think twice about this.
The 529 gets the boot.
That's right. You know, Fidelity is actually unlikely to be your best choice with this specific plan with the 529 account because the state of Georgia already has a killer direct sold plan. And I know it can be confusing, but 529 plans are unique. And the best way to fund one is through a state-specific plan almost all the time. You know, and often, but not always, that means going through the plan of the state you live in, right? And that is specifically true for us in the state of Georgia. We have one of the best lowest-cost plans in the nation. And Matt, there's a bunch of states that have great low-cost plans and a tax benefit to go along with it. But while Fidelity does manage a few of the state plans, Georgia isn't one of them. And so,
nope,
Dave, this could mean that you're missing out on a massive benefit going this route, the state income tax deduction. So we would say, normally, our advice to most people is not to ditch Fidelity. But in this case, ditch Fidelity and go directly through Path to College, which is Georgia's specific 529 plan, you're going to get greater tax savings, and the costs are going to be ridiculously low.
Exactly. Yeah. So in our state, the state of Georgia, so Dave, he said he's in Marietta, and technically that's where we live. We always say Atlanta because I still claim Atlanta. We've, you know, spent the past two decades basically down in city proper, but technically we're up in Marietta mm-hmm. now. So we are here in the state of Georgia, like Dave is, and in our Dave is. And in our state, you can mitigate that state income tax on up to $8,000 that you sock away into a path to college, college savings plan per beneficiary. And that means if you've got multiple kids, or Joel, even in your case, if you've got a wife going back to school.
Which I do, and I'm taking advantage of this.
You can, so we both have the ability to offset our state income tax by $32,000.
That's right.
You can massively reduce your state income tax by socking more money into that account. Of course, you don't want that to be the only reason that you contribute to a 529 account. You don't want the tail to wag the dog. There are better investment accounts out there that are going to offer better tax avoidance and help you to build wealth for your own future that take into account federal deductions as well. But this is worth mentioning. So, Dave, for you, stop contributing to that Fidelity plan. Go directly to, so literally the URL is path, the number two, college, 529.com. Go to that instead. And it's a fairly well-run website. The plans that they offer there are great. The fees are insanely low, and it really is one of the best in the nation. Anybody who's listening to this and you live in the great state of Georgia, you are lucky to have this as an option.
Agreed. And all right, let's specifically get to the heart of Dave's question, which was about which funds to invest in inside of a 529 plan. And FZ Rocks, you mentioned that. That's a great fund that we talk about regularly because it's a ridiculously cheap, and by cheap, I mean free, total stock market index fund. And so it's particularly great for really young investors in the wealth building phase of their life. And your newborn kiddo would kind of fit that bill, right? Who's got almost two decades.
At least 18 years.
Yeah, for this money to grow. The choices that you're going to have through Georgia's 529 plan, though, they're static portfolios and they're dynamic age-based ones. So they're multiple different choices that you can make. Static means you can choose a specific fund, like an all-equity or an all-fixed income allotment. But the age-based choices are the best choice for most people to make, I would say. They're kind of akin to a target date fund,
exactly,
but on a truncated timetable. What's the expense ratio on these funds? It's 0.06 to 0.1. It doesn't get much better than that. The fees are negligible, essentially.
Insanely low. And so,
I think the target date fund, Matt, just for most people makes sense because over the years, that will gradually get slightly more conservative as mm-hmm. your kiddo gets closer to college. So I really like that as a choice for most people that kind of set it and forget it.
Totally. Yeah. And we're specifically highlighting the Georgia plan, but most states have similar offerings, although not many with quite as tiny of an expense ratio as here in Georgia. But whether your state has an age-based plan or not, you could go with an all-equity choice, so that static option, which has performed a whole lot better this year. Certainly, it's not going to be true every single year. But if you do opt to go in that more risk, more reward direction, you'll likely want to remember to change that as you get closer to your little girl needing that money for school. I think you mentioned, Dave, like maybe in 16 years or so, I think that might be a good period of time to take a look at that. Because, again, if you look at, it depends on how comfortable you are with risk. Because when you look at and we've mentioned this frequently, but the rolling periods of time and how often the stock market is to go up. Personally, I don't think I'm going to consider looking at that until my oldest kid turns 15. Because if you look at the rolling 3-year period, it's about 85% of the time that the stock market goes up. And so even money that you were to invest for her at age 15, you still have 3 more years of there being a high likelihood of that amount increasing. And even if you pair that back even to a single year, it only drops from 85%. To 75%, which is still very high. The odds are still highly in your favor that were you to leave that in the market, it would continue to grow. That's why we say 3 out of every 4 years of money invested in the market, historically speaking, does go up. The stock market does go up, meaning that the money that you'll have will be a higher amount. So
yeah, I think you can feel comfortable with either one of those choices. Just like kind of what you're saying, though, is set a calendar reminder for 12 to 15 years from now to reassess, right? And to say, wait a second, if I chose the all equity fund, should I pair this back now to the target date fund just so that I'm not putting all the chips on the table as I'm getting closer to needing the money to spend on college?
And I think it depends too what the market is doing at that point in time as well. Because let's say it's been 15 years and the market is at all time highs and you know that she's definitely going to go to college, I think I would be more prone to go ahead and, all right, let's go ahead and shift that money over to quote unquote target date fund. But again, given the historical returns of the market, if the market is in a slump, I think I would say, well, let's go ahead and leave it invested, because chances are of it rebounding are pretty high over the course of the next few years.
Yeah, it gives you some flexibility, but I think
flexibility, absolutely.
You can go with either one of those directions.
And especially if she's not going to go to college, right? Because that's something you talked about, reevaluating. The older she gets, she's going to have opinions as to what it is her life is going to look like. And so if she is not going to use that money for higher education, leaving it completely invested in equities, because guess what? She's not going to need to tap this until she's retiring, because this is going to roll into a Roth. That would definitely be an instance of leaving that money invested 100% in equities.
Yeah. Yep. No, that's true. And that having that as a backstop, being able to roll those dollars over into Roth IRA money for the beneficiary, is one of the coolest new features that 529s offer. So, big thanks to the Congress for fixing that issue. But Matt, we've got a little more to get to on this episode. And specifically, what about not helping a baby invest? What about helping a teenager who's getting their first job to invest? We'll talk about that right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues, like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
Yeah, so this is almost like a kid-themed episode. We're talking to somebody who doesn't yet have a kid. We've talked to somebody who has a very, very young kiddo, but we now have our Facebook question of the week. He's got a kid that's a bit older. So this one's from Eric, and he said, question for parents of working teens. What have you found is the best way to get them to invest in their retirement? Roth IRA? Even if it's only $5 or $10 a week, I want them to view investing as standard practice and get used to having a standard percentage taken out every week. Our son is now 16 and he starts his first job this weekend at a grocery store. I'm doubtful, they will have a 401k or that he will be eligible. Yes, unlikely that he's going to get a match at a Kroger or Winn-Dixie or something.
Well, let's be honest. Some of those companies do offer it, but not to their part-time employees, right?
Not if you're bagging groceries and hauling in carts.
There are some notable exceptions, though. Some companies that, like Starbucks, that offers some pretty significant benefits to folks who are working Uber part-time, right, in the 20-hour work week range. But with your kid being in high school, he might not even be working that much, right? But yeah, congrats to you and your son on this job. I think high school jobs are the best, Matt. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Like, mine sure taught me a lot. There's a different way of relating to a manager than relating to a teacher. And even just being a few minutes late or being slightly lazy, right, when I should have been working. Like, I learned a heck of a lot about work ethic and I started working when I was 14 at the fast food joint across the street from my high school. And it was a really good experience. I wouldn't say like I loved it at the time, but it molded me in some really important ways. Yeah. And I think it's great that Eric is down for micro investing too. $5 or $10, even just that a week, like he said, can and will make a difference for your son. And it's more than just the money, right? It's the habit of starting to invest at such a young age that's so powerful.
Oh, yeah.
It's the fact that he starts to see himself as an investor. He's doing the thing. It's kind of like kinetic energy. It's like the object in motion tends to stay in motion. And I think the same thing is true for investors. It's like the earlier you start, it's unlikely that you're just going to be like, not doing that anymore. Even if you continue it at just a meager pace, you're going to continue.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just think back to what I was taught about money. Basically, my parents taught me to give away 10% of the money I earn from doing my chores. Like, starting from as early as I can remember counting dimes, I was giving, like, I would receive a dollar, and I was giving one of those dimes, one of those 10 away, and that stuck with me. And because of that, it's something I've literally never struggled with. It's become something that's important to me,
habitual,
like,
it's knee-jerk.
Yes, it's a little more intentional now, but at the same time, it's so ingrained as to how it is I handle my money. Like, whether it was working in college or as a young adult when Kate and I first got married, it was like never a question that was on the table. It was just sort of like a default, and it's like, well, if we're not going to do this, we need to talk about it. But the assumption is that we're going to continue to give away a portion of our money. And so, again, especially at a young age, kids can be so impressionable, and you can have such a big impact, even though in the moment you might think, okay, what big difference is this actually making?
It feels small,
but it goes a really long way.
Yeah, I would say that the behavioral impact is even more important than the monetary effect.
Yeah,
you're not gonna, like, not even close.
Yeah, exactly. Like, his first year of working a real job, like, once he's in college or post-college, he's going to be able to more than dwarf the money that he's been able to basically accumulate, most likely, his entire working teenage career, essentially. Unless he, like, goes out and starts his own lawn mowing business. Yeah. I had a friend in high school, and he was crushing it. Like, he ended up, he was buying, like, trailers, bringing on other guys to cut lawns for him as well. I was like, dude. And he ended up running that business, like, well into his 20s
and
30s.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool.
It's amazing. But Eric was asking about specific accounts. The Roth IRA, like, that really is the smart way to go here for your son. And a reason for that is because his income is likely going to be incredibly low as a teenager. Every dollar that you shove into a Roth when your earnings are meager, it just gets amplified in a massive way. And a Roth is definitely a great way to do that. Yeah, plus, just the added flexibility. I'm not going to harp on about how great the Roth IRAs are, but you have also got that.
Well, the higher your earnings, the more difficult it is to choose Roth over traditional, because you're like, should I take the tax break now? But the lower your income is, which as a high school working at a grocery store, it's not going to be anything to write home about. And talk about the ridiculously high standard deduction. I mean, that is another thing that's just going to ensure that basically any money that he socks away in a Roth is largely shielded from tax and also will never be taxed again. So Roth for the win here for sure. So we would suggest helping him open one up, be it Fidelity or Vanguard. Betterment's a great way to go too. You might want to incentivize him even by offering a match of your own. So this is just this is just another way to kind of enhance the behavioral benefit of helping him to invest. So let's say, for instance, he's willing to contribute $2,000 of the $5,000 that he's earned. Maybe you can add a 50% or even 100% match if you have the spare cash and you're so inclined to kind of help him go down this path even more quickly. It's just such a great thing to be able to do for him and for his future. And it can help drive home powerfully just how important investing can be at an early age when you're saying, listen, like, yeah, you're going to see an average of, like, 9% returns in the market over the years, something like that. But guess what? This year and next year, you're going to see 100% return because the daddy match is kicking in.
And that's going to be way more powerful, especially in those early years of investing. Because honestly, seeing 9% on $2,000, that ain't much.
Right.
And so it, you know, like you said, even matching up to 100%, right? So him being able to turn his $2,000 into $4,000, that's great. What you can't do is match it 200%, where he's ultimately contributing $6,000, right? So his two plus $4,000 that if you're matching 200%, right? And that's because he didn't earn $6,000. Yeah. He earned $5,000 in this example. And so that's one particular that you need to pay attention to, is that you can't, even though the IRS allows, well, you might be saying, the IRS, I thought the contribution limits were $6,500. Well, yeah, but he didn't earn $6,500. You have to technically actually earn the amount that you're socking away within a Roth IRA like that. So that's something to keep in mind as well. You can't exceed the amount that he actually earns.
These couple of levers are going to be huge in helping your son get started on the right foot. And the fact that you're thinking
about it, like that boost.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
helping
like
him think about it.
Wind
huge.
At his back. And I don't know, we're like five, six years away from our oldest daughter driving on her own, which sounds kind of far away, but it's really not that far away.
Yeah.
And we've already started to have some discussions where I've said, hey, you know, if mom or I aren't driving, if there's a car available, of course, you'll be able to, we'll let you borrow that car. But if you're wanting something that's your own or something that's different, you need to start saving now. But also, whatever money you're willing to put towards buying that car, we will be willing to match 100%. So let's say you've got $7,000 that you are able to save up in the next 5 years from babysitting and whatever other job you might pick up. All right, dang it. We got to make sure to set aside another $7,000. That way she's able to buy a $14,000 vehicle if that's something she's willing to do. But yeah, some of those just different ways to incentivize behavior. All about it, man.
100%.
You know, yeah.
Those incentives matter, right? They help define what choices we make. And if the incentive is big enough, I'll change my behavior pretty quick, for sure.
Because that's, I mean, I think that's what's so great about the 100% match is because employers will match dollar for dollar. Like that is a realistic incentive that you'll see out in the market. But you also don't want to do it too much. You don't want to make it so unrealistic that it almost spoils them to real investing in the real world. It makes me think about trying to teach the kids about compounding interest. And I was paying 1% on money that they left, quote unquote, invested in their account. But I was paying that weekly. and that 1% every single week, it built up pretty dang quickly. And so I also wonder, on one hand, if when they do start investing, I just kind of ruined it for them, because they're like, never, if they're always going to expect 2020 Bitcoin like returns when it comes to their regular investments, I'm afraid that I've even set the bar too high when it comes to investing.
I don't think so. I think it's the concept that matters more than kind of exactly how it plays out. But
I guess I think about when I was a kid and seeing the measly returns from opening a savings account.
Exactly.
And this is back in the late 80s, early 90s.
You're like, why do people do this?
And I'm just like, this is the most disappointing thing ever. I'm earning like pennies. But granted, that was a savings account. I wasn't actually investing.
Yeah.
But even still, I just remember that as a kid, and I was under-incentivized at that point. And I'm afraid that maybe I swung too far with my kids and over-incentivized. But I think finding the happy medium for you, Eric, is the most important
thing. I
think
it's hard to overdo it. I really do. I really do. I mean, so I think this is a good way to do it. I think it's a tried and true method. And I think you're already on the right path. You're asking the right questions.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You're going to help shepherd him in the right direction, no matter like how much of a match you're giving, I think. But Matt, let's head back to the beer on this one.
Yeah.
This was, and I'll pronounce it right this time, Hasta La Vista, Mexican lager.
Hasta La Vista.
Hasta La Vista. And it's by Frog Rock Brewery. What were your thoughts on this beer, man?
Yeah, okay. So on the can there, it says that this is made from Lithonia Spring. Wait, is it Lithonia?
Or Lithia.
Lithia. Lithia Springs spring water.
Yeah.
How much do you think that spring water impacts the flavor of this beer?
Because probably a lot.
It tastes...
Water's the number one ingredient in beer.
It makes sense. Yeah, and it says on there, like, it's got a certain amount of, like, sulfate or sulfites or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I can taste that. And maybe I'm just imagining it in my head, but,
the
like...
The branding's got to you.
Do you feel like that there's, like, almost like the tiniest minerally sulfur-like quality to
There's,
to
like,
this,
a mineral sweetness
lager?
To this one, for sure, yeah.
So, I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
At first, it kind of caught me off guard, but the more I kept sipping it during this episode, I thought, I kind of dig this. I mean, it's like straight from the earth. I don't know. It feels like pure. Something about it makes me feel like I'm out in nature, I guess, drinking from a spring that happens to produce beer. Oh, that's amazing.
Wouldn't that be incredible? If you find it, let me know. Yeah, no, I really like this one too. And I didn't realize Mexican lagers, they're actually, and I looked this up in advance of recording this, they're Vienna lagers made with adjuncts, typically with corn. And so this is sweeter, I would say, than most Mexican lagers I've had. But it's laid back. It's a good brew. And the
I've never even heard of these guys.
I feel like, you know what? Mexican lagers are supposed to have a lime, though, right? We didn't have a lime on this one. So next time we have this one.
That might add a sharp tartness to it.
Yeah, I think that would perfect it, for sure. Yeah.
Maybe we'll swing by there, check these guys out. I've literally never even heard of these, but definitely thankful for Joe for donating this one, plus another one that we're going to have at some point as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, buddy. That's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.